Thanks for the introduction, and thank you very much for inviting me to this theoretical institute. Although I'm an experimentalist working on 2D materials, so my talk, as Marcel kindly introduced, it will be focused on studying the new phenomena in 2D materials, and this is the title. I'm going to talk about the stack-induced spontaneous polarization in rhombohedral MS2. And so Marcel's talk already very nicely motivated the interesting physics in this van der Waals material, especially with some twist. For example, this emergent topological superconductivity in twisted cuprate. And if I have time at the end of the talk, I will talk about the ongoing effort in our lab in probing these physics. The right figure is another well-known example that when you have a magical twist in graphene, you have this exotic superconductivity. But I want to point out the other side of the coin. Actually, some of these exotic physics can appear even in van der Waals materials without twist. And the key is to find those crystals with a relatively rare or less well-known stacking order. So one example shown here is the rhombohedral graphite. Actually, in the natural graphite, you do have multiple stacking order. So the most common one, which accounts for probably 90% of graphite, is this Bunnell stacking, that you have a graphene sheet, and the second layer is stacked, is shifted along one direction, but third layer is shifted back. And the shift is back for so on and so forth. So these traditions are called the Bunnell stacking, and also in the three layers denoted as ABA stacking. But actually, in the nature, you can find 10% of graphite is stacked in a slightly different way. It's called rhombohedral stacking, in the sense that the shift actually is continuous along one direction. So okay, it works. Maybe this is better. So you can see this is also in the trilayer limit denoted as ABC ABC graphene, that because the third layer is no longer equivalent as the first layer, is continuously shifted here towards the left direction, right? So the interesting thing of these rhombohedral graphite, or in the trilayer called ABC trilayer graphene, is you also have a very flat band near the Fermi level. So if you tune the Fermi surface to there and look at the transport property, you can see all kinds of similar interesting correlated physics, for example, Mohr-Hubbell insulator or unconventional superconductivity. This has been reported by von Wong's group in Berkeley and Zhe Yang's group in UC Santa Barbara. So this is the motivation for my work. So if you look into the nature, actually the rhombohedral stacking exists not only for graphite, but also for another class of 2D material, transition metal dichalcogenide. And the most common example is moly disulfide. This is in the monolayer limit, a direct band gap semiconductor previously pioneered by my post advisor Tony Hines and Kingfai Ma. And the bulk crystal of moly disulfide, I mean, most of you here probably are serious. Let me show you the crystal structure. The most common stacking order for moly disulfide is similar as ABA graphite, that the second layer actually is in the sense that it's not shifted compared with the first layer. So in order for that to happen, in the moly disulfide, it's slightly different, because in the AB site, you have one moly in one A site and the sulfide atom in the B site. So the lattice symmetry is broken. So for it to stay on the same first layer, you need to have a second layer rotated 180 degrees. And you can see this is so-called the hexagonal stacking. And in the rhombohedral stacking order, actually such a rotation is not necessary. And you have a parallel stacking of two layer, and actually the second layer is shifted relative to the first layer, and the shift continues will be happen for the bulk crystal in the Z direction. And the three layer will finish a unit cell, so therefore this rhombohedral MOS2, sometimes it's also called a 3R MOS2. In the early days, this crystal actually is known. It's actually the earliest synthesis happened in 1970s. And it turns out, although you can hardly find this rhombohedral crystal in nature, but in the lab synthesis, if you change the transport gas from actually bromide to chloride, so it's possible to synthesize these 3R MOS2. And the recent paper on this was from Iwasa's group. At that time, they were interested in seeing the band structure of monolayer TMD, and it's really hard to do upper on the small sample at that time. So they instead grow these 3R MOS2 and try to probe the band structure of monolayer on the surface. And the reason is, as you can imagine, the shift in a real space barely change anything in terms of band structure. Yeah, the Fourier transform of a shifted function in the real space only give you additional phase in the momentum space, for example. Therefore, at that time, people thought such a rhombohedral crystal should have the same electronic structure as the monolayer. But actually, as study goes on to more detail level, it turns out there's a very interesting interlayer coupling, and it's asymmetric between the two layers happen to such a rhombohedral stacking. And the physics actually can be understood if we go step back, take one step back and look at the simplest model for so-called valley physics. So I assume most of you are theoretical students and the researchers, so I don't need to go in deep about the gap graphing model. So the conclusion is, if you have a gap graphing model, there will be a valley angular momentum associated with k and a k prime valley, and they are time reversal pair, so the angular momentum actually will reverse in the other valley. And the physical consequence of this valley angular momentum, it's a consequence of the Barrett phase. And the consequence is, in order to conserve this valley angular momentum, you have to use, let's say, circularly polarized light to excite the transition. So in the K valley, the delta M equal to 2, or in the threefold symmetry is -1. So you have to use, let's say, left circularized light to excite transition in the K valley. And in the K prime valley, everything is reversed. So you have to use optically circular light to excite transitions there. And this physics actually is slightly modified in the rhombohedral stacked moly disulfide. And the way to understand it is like this. Now you have two layers of, let's say, gap graphene, and they are shifted. And the valley angular momentum, actually, you need to count the phase winding relative to some rotation center. So here, let's say we have a BA stacking, and we have top layer shifted relative to the bottom layer. And let's choose the center of the bottom layer as the common rotation center. And then if you look at the bottom layer, and if we look at the phase distribution for a block wave at the K point, then you have a phase distribution like this, which give you a valley angular momentum of +1. So this is the same as the monolayer, but if you look at the top layer, because the rotation center is no longer the center of the convention cell. So it's actually on top of one moly atom. So if you look at the phase winding distribution, this actually give you a valley angular momentum of 0. So another way of thinking how this can happen is, actually the valley angular momentum is dependent on how you chose the rotation center. But in the monolayer case, the valence band angular momentum may change as you choose different rotation center. The conduction band will change accordingly. So the difference is always the same. It's like the gauge uncertainty or gauge freedom. But here, now, for the two layer, they are stacked in the fixed configuration. So they have to share the same rotation center. As a result, this phase difference becomes physical. It will give you a physical consequence. And the physical consequence of this is, now if you look at the valley angular momentum in the top and the bottom layer, they will differ by one for both valence band and the conduction band. So let's say the top layer has a valley angular momentum of minus one for the valence band and a zero for the conduction band, and you have a valley selection rule still exists for the top layer. And for the bottom layer, you have valley angular momentum of zero and a plus one. And now you see the contrast between the top and the bottom layer cause a forbidden coupling or direct forbidden coupling between the two layers. So you cannot allow conduction band to couple, neither the valence band coupling is allowed. So the only allowed coupling actually is between bands with the same angular momentum. So only this conduction band valence band coupling is allowed, I mean, to the first order. Then you have a remote band, second conduction band, second valence band, which are also allowed, for example. And the result of this coupling, first of all, is you will have a band level repulsion, let's say. So the conduction band in the top layer will shift upward, and valence band in the bottom layer will shift downward. This is consequence one. And the consequence two is part of a charge which originally in the valence band in the bottom layer actually will transfer to the top layer due to such a coupling. And the result is you will have a charge distribution, a redistribution between the top and bottom layer. The top bottom layer will be more positively charged, and top layer will be slightly more negatively charged. And this translates to a spontaneous electrical polarization out of plane. And of course, due to this charge redistribution, you will have an electric field, and this is in the ferroelectricity community, it's called the depolarization field, because the electric field direction is anti-parallel to the polarization. And if you integrate it, you will see there will be some interlayer potential due to this electric field, and these are all physically measurable. So how do we measure it? I mean, by the way, this is the Berry phase picture. You can also just put this crystal structure into DFT, and you can see immediately there will be interlayer potential coming out of this stacking order. And the stacking, actually, the shift can happen leftward or rightward. So in this talk, we defined leftward as AB stacking, and the rightward as BA stacking. As you imagine, for AB stacking, the polarization should be downward, and for the BA stacking, the polarization should be upward. Okay, so we are actually the first experimental group to probe this out-of-plane spontaneous polarization. And the way we probe it is using the optical method. And since we are most theoretical researchers here, so I'll mostly focus on the physical picture. So the way we probe it is we use some capacitor to dope some free carrier in this bilayer MOS2. And if you don't have any electric field, external electric field, you only have internal built-in electric field, what happens is the conduction band will be lower in the bottom layer than the top layer. So the free carrier will naturally exist in the bottom layer. So the optical transition in the bottom layer actually will be modified. So if you know about the MOS2, there's a very strong axitonic effect. And if you dope it, it will become a trion. So what happens is the bottom layer will become a trion transition, and the top layer remain an axitone. And if you apply an external electric field, and you will see the band will gradually become flattened between the two, between the top and the bottom layer, and the charge will transfer from bottom to top, and at one point they should balance, so both layer have transition become a trion. And if you apply a very large electric field, all the charge will transfer from bottom to the top, so that only the top transition will become trion, and the bottom become go back to the axitone. And this is our experimental data. And if you look at the oscillator strength and the peak position, and you can clearly see the transition of axon to trion in the bottom layer and vice versa for the top layer. So with this method, we probed the interlayer potential due to this deep position field, which is about 60 millivolt. And this corresponding to interlayer coupling. This is coupling just between the K and the K point in the top and bottom layer, which is about 100 millivolt. Okay, I mean, this is some additional data just to show you we know what we are doing. We can dope it into the conduction band. This is how we probe the interlayer potential, but we can also dope in the valence band. And the valence band physics theory is different because the highest valence band is actually at the gamma point. So when you dope it to valence band, both the top and the bottom layer transition become trion because the charge at the gamma point is shared between two layers. Because there, the two layers are strongly hybridized. There's no, let's say, asymmetric coupling, which forbids this two-layer coupling. Okay, the latest data, actually, we are wrapping this up. When we apply very strong field, you actually can switch this stacking. So as I said, in the AB layer, the position is upward. And if you apply very strong field, this has become a ferroelectric phenomena. The sliding can be reversed, and the position will go to a down direction. And we can use optical method to probe this switching. Okay, so what's the use of this polarization? And we come up an interesting way to demonstrate the interesting physics. So we basically build a photovoltaic device out of this spontaneous polarization. And the way we build it is we start from a bilayer 3R MOS2, and then we sandwich it by two sheets of graphene. And the charge here is just naturally arise due to this spontaneous polarization. And if I now shine light at this junction, you imagine there will be some photocarrier excited. And under the depolarization electric field, this will give you a current. And you can use a multimeter, for example, to measure this photocurrent. And here, I want to emphasize the role of graphene, that the charge induced in graphene due to the limited denser state near the direct point actually give you a reduced screening. If you imagine, if I just put a normal metal here, I will induce equal amount of charge in the graphene sheet or in the metal sheet that will actually screen most of my depolarization field. But the graphene is different. It has very small denser state near the Fermi level, so you have actually can preserve most of depolarization field. So quickly, I will show our experimental data. We have made a device composed of a monolayer, bilayer, and trilayer. You can see in the monolayer regime, we don't see any photocurrent. But in the bilayer and the trilayer, we see significant more. And actually, as you go thicker, it will get more and more because this depolarization field can adds up in the 3R MOS2 limit. As I said, in the stacking, you can have AB and BA, and they should have an opposite polarization. And in one sample, we also see such a distribution. And you can see the photocurrent, some in the BA is positive, and in the AB is negative. So here is more detailed IV plot about this effect. This is slightly different from what you learn in a photovoltaic effect. As you can see, the IV distribution is not actually asymptotic. And the reason we understand this is in addition to the photovoltaic effect, we also have some thermal effect, for example, bolometric effect and a photothermoelectric effect in it. But this is probably not interesting to theorists. So we extract it and plotted the intrinsic photovoltaic effect in it. So here you can see it's photovoltaic effect. At the zero bias, we have photocurrent. And when we apply a bias, all these photocurrent actually stop. Different color line means you shine the junction with different power of light. And the voltage where the photocurrent stop is in the photovoltaic device is called the open circuit voltage. And this determines the efficiency of the solar cell, for example. And the open circuit voltage we retrieve here is about three times larger than the an interlayer potential we measure in the previous paper. And the reason we now understand it is because we have actually a very large lead current in our device. So this lead current is due to the phenomenologically we attribute to a shunt resistance. And the reason is you know the graphene is sandwiched by two sheets of actually six atomic layer, two sheets of MOS2, which is very, very thin. So once you separate the photocarrier by depolarization field, there will be some significant tunneling back through this tunneling barrier. And this tunneling barrier, the conductivity through this tunneling barrier and the WKB approximation actually is very temperature dependent. So we found actually that the efficiency of our device is also highly temperature dependent. So at the low temperature, we see at the peak of axon absorption, we see external efficiency of 10%. This is actually very significant because if you think about the MOS2, bilayer only absorbed about 10% or 15% of light. So this actually translates to an internal quantum efficiency, which means you shine one light and ask how many photons come out. This gives you almost about 100% internal quantum efficiency. So this actually motivated us to look at what's the dynamics of this charge carrier separation and the why it can give you such a high internal quantum efficiency. So we now in this newly accepted paper use an ultrafast experiment to probe the dynamics. And as I said, there's a very strong temperature dependence on this photocurrent. So we intentionally now use a sub-band gap light to heat up the device. So this initially was absorbed by graphene, this IR pulse, and then graphene transferred the heat to MOS2, and this reduced the photocurrent generated by the second visible pulse. And if you look at the contrast between with heating and without heating, and we can probe the dynamics of this photocurrent. And the rise of this time dependence give you the farthest component of our photocurrent is about 2 picoseconds. So which means once we shine light, within 2 picoseconds, actually we can extract the photocurrent. And this speed is not surprisingly very fast because our junction is very, very thin. And we think the dynamics is ultimately limited by the charge transfer process between the MOS2 and the graphene. Okay, so in the maybe next 10 minutes, I want to talk about another interesting discovery as we look into these 3R MOS2. So as I said, there's a interesting distribution of AB and ABA stack domain polarization even in the bilayer. So we want to see in the large sample and even in the thick limit, how the stacking order will distribute. So for that, it's not convenient to make a, let's say, optical gated device for every flake. So we instead turn to this scanning probe technique. And what it can be done is you can use an AFM tip to measure the so-called surface potential in the film. And as I draw here, if you have, let's say, a domain, which half of that is AB stacking and half of that will be BA stacking, and in the middle it's a domain wall. And what happens is you will have a step in the surface potential if you're assuming the substrate had the same equal electrical potential. And this using the AFM tip to measure the surface potential is historically called the EFM, electrical force microscope, or Kevin probe force microscopy. This is actually commonly used to determine the polarization in the ferroelectric film. So we did this experiment for the 3R MOS2, and we found something very interesting and surprising. And this is our data. So we are still wrapping this up. We saw in a homogeneous trilayer flake, this is AFM topography. This is very large sample, so we cannot finish using one scan. So we stack multiple scan up, and these are just artifacts in the stacking. And the right image is what we see for the domain distribution. And you can see I have a very interesting distribution of domain. I have a lot of small domain and also have some very large domain. And they show up here like some like a mountain shape and some have a river shape. And you can use, let's say, the knowledge we accumulate about this interlayer potential to attribute to this stacking order. So we conclude that most of this flake is up. This is a trilayer, so you have two interfaces, and each interface gives you a polarization. So you have up, some are up, down, some are down, down, some are down, up. And if you look at the size distribution of these domains, we found something very surprising that you have a lot of small domains, and you also have some very large domains. And if you look at this plot, I break the horizontal axis twice because it's really wide distribution and hard to plot it on a single plot. And this is a linear scale plot. And we, at that time, Scratchhead, it's really hard to find average domain size for such a distribution. And it turns out this distribution, if you plot in a log-log way, actually it will lie on a linear line. And this suggests there's a likely a power law distribution in terms of domain size. And we were surprised, and we look into a multiple flake, and this is different flake. Some are thicker, some are larger. But it turns out, although the absolute frequency will change, but the distribution of these domain size distribution is always power law with a power law beta exponent between 1.5 and 1.6. If I define the power law as the domain size number of certain domain size. Okay, so we look into, and this is basically the data corresponding to the extra lines I plotted. You can see they are all very colorful with different kind of domain size, but the general common character is you have always a lot of small domains and some very, very large domains. And then we look into the literature and find there was actually a very universal power law distribution of so-called the slip size. And the power law distribution is also about 1.50. So what happened is, if you apply a shear strain to a crystal, under some above some thresholds, that this crystal cannot hold such a large shear strain, it will slip. And it turns out that the slip size distribution will also be power law distribution. And this is what summarized in this paper. And this slip size can be as large as an earthquake, as small as nanocrystal. Across here, 15 orders magnitude, the distribution is always power lawly distributed with an exponent about 1.5. So this is, I think, similar physics in our system. And what happened is, during exfoliation, inevitably, there will be shear strain in our crystal. And this shear basically push the domain boundary towards one direction. And if we have multiple pinning center in our crystal, then if you don't have pinning crystals, then the domain wall will move homogeneously under this shear strain. But if you have multiple pinning center with, let's say, randomly distributed pinning strengths, then you will have some domain which is trapped unswitched. And these unswitched domain, if you statistically treat it, you expect to see a power law distribution due to so-called non-equivalent depinning phase transition. Okay, so we are experimental group, but we took the courage to do some numerical calculation. So we start from a simulation domain. The first left column, we say it's a polarization up, and the rest is polarization down. And we assign a random distribution of pinning strengths to this simulation domain. and ask, if I apply external strain, how the flipping can happen. And of course, I need to assume some nearness coupling. This is so-called a random icing model. And if my external strain is above this threshold, then I say the second domain can be flipped by the neighboring domain. And this is our simulation result. This is in collaboration with a series in QMIC. His name is called Professor Jörg Rodler. And what happened is we saw that in no matter the large simulation or small simulation, we always see a threshold in terms of the percolation probability. When I define this percolation probability, I mean the domain basically goes through the whole simulation size and reach the right column. And this percolation, this critical threshold is slightly sensitive on the random pinning strength distribution as well as the field simulation size, but these are of detail. And interesting thing is near the threshold, we do see the result of this simulation is it gives you a range of unflipped domain. So I start from, let's say, -1, and after percolation, most of area becomes +1, except some domain are left as -1. And if you do the statistics on this unflipped domain, it also gives you a power law with an exponent about 1.5. So although I think this is a very, very crude model, and you can see the domain shape does not, look like as what we saw in the experiment, but at least give you the right trend in understanding what's going on in reality. Okay, last is another piece of surprise that, as you can imagine, in real experiment, the shear won't be homogeneous. So sometimes you will have, let's say, non-homogeneous shear, which will cause the crystal to twist. And this twist actually is also saw sometimes in our sample. And this twist shows that you will have a moiré lattice in this ferroelectric position domain. And this moiré now, because it's not artificially twisted, so the moiré size actually is very, very large. Here, I believe each moiré cell is about 100 nanometer, which corresponding to only a 0.08 degree twist in this bilayer sample. Okay, I think last bit of a discussion I want to give you is regarding the comparison with graphite. First of all, this is, we think, the very interesting observation of non-equivalent critical phenomena in the atomic sink limit. And before our experiment, this was not seen in the rhombohedral graphite. And we also is wondering how did this happen? I mean, this is a work by Tony Hines' group. And at that time, they used Raman to look at the ABC and the ABA distribution in the trilayer graphene. And they don't see such a power law distribution. And they don't see actually that the domain size or the ratio between ABA and ABC can change after exfoliation. And this is apparently different in the MS2 case. So we are wondering what will be the cause of this difference. So I think I will skip the BISCO part. If you have questions, you can ask me. And come to this summary that we see a spontaneous pollution in the 3L MS2. And this, we demonstrate, can cause a ultra-fast photovoltaic effect with very high efficiency. And we used the KPFM and the EFM to probe the domain, and we saw a very interesting power law distribution among the domain size, and we attribute to the so-called avalanche of slip during the exfoliation. Okay, with this, I would like to thank you very much for your attention. Yeah, so my understanding is no. This is always a shear string, so it's not a compressive string. So it's already probably means you cannot happen in the two dimension or one dimension. Because in the two dimension, then the shear string will be, you basically have a single sheet of atoms, and this it won't happen. Yeah, I talked to the series. So it turns out it's a universality class of itself called the depending phase transition. And it's slightly different from commonly known as the percolation phase transition, for example. Yeah. I think it's general for, at least for transition metal dichalcogenide. So we are looking for other compound to look into it. The reason it's hard to visualize in the 2H is even slip happen, there's no physical consequence. And the advantage of rhombohedral stacking is you have a polarization. When slip happen, you can see the flip of polarization. The question I have now is why actually for graphite, the stacking order seems more robust to such a shear, and this is something I don't know. Yeah, it's also an open question right now. So we see a polarization which can go up to 100 Kelvin or 100 C or 200 C. Basically, we think the crystal start to become mobile when you are close to the melting temperature. But in the literature now, so we are studying these rhombohedral crystal in the natural crystal, but in MIT and Columbia, they are artificially stacking TMD with almost aligned crystal orientation. And there you have so-called marginally twisted TMDs, and you have a lot of domains, and apparently the domains there is more sensitive to temperature. The Columbia group report at 100 C, you start to lose the polarization due to in these Moray crystal.